Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window Podcast, which, you know, brings you the news before it becomes news, because it was this particular pod that brought you the news of Manchester United's new director of football and their decision to appoint and indeed change their structure, which was confirmed, of course, in the last 24 hours. We'll also bring you insight and analysis into all the subjects you're talking about in football. I mean, McGowan with me as always is the transfer guru and the man who has led on the story of Manchester United's search to appoint a guru for their recruitment process over the last 18 months. It is now, Duncan, I suspect. It's taken a long time to appoint someone, but we have now got a result in terms of the people who they have elected to take charge of that particular process. And they have appointed from within, not a surprise, given Ed Woodward's preference to make sure that he trusts and, of course, can influence those who work in that particular part of the football department. John Murta has been appointed as director of football, and Darren Fletcher, former Manchester United captain, as technical director, and Matt Judge, who effectively was doing this particular job anyway, has been officially recognised as director of negotiations in terms of contracts and transfers. Duncan, it's been a long-running saga. As I said, it's not particularly surprising that they have appointed people who have already been working at the club. Is this going to work? I think is the question most Manchester United fans are asking, because there was a appetite to bring someone in, maybe even from abroad, who knew and had contacts beyond Manchester United in terms of the recruitment of players. Does it satisfy the job description?
Well, you're right that they've been at this process for a long time. They started briefing about it in 2018. The issue was raised with the previous manager, Jose Mourinho, of bringing a director of football in. He had resistance to that idea, but was also open to a change in the organisation at the club. But he wanted the individual to come in to be someone he felt he could work with. And he proposed Luis Campos as the candidate. And United decided not to appoint at that time, said that it was going to be a priority after they dismissed Mourinho and brought Solskjaer in as manager. I've briefed on that on several occasions. As you said, in December, we reported that they intended to appoint in the new year and had shortlisted a number of very high profile candidates. And I think this is the key to this story, is they had the opportunity to go for some of the best technical directors in the world in terms of established achievements on their CVs. So Mark Overmars was on that list. I'm told by contacts at Ajax that he actually withdrew from the candidacy after speaking to Manchester United. Luis Campos was on that shortlist. If you want to hear about his way of working, you can go back to the interview we did with Luis a few weeks ago on the podcast. So they were able to go to the top of the market here. They were able to put the money down, and these would not have been cheap appointments in terms of salary for directors of football, but you could argue they would also be not expensive appointments in the context of the club, in that if you bring in a top director of football who works and improves your operations, then you get that value back in multiples of hundreds in terms of signing the right players, in terms of improving performances on the field and the prize money and sponsorship money that comes along with that. They decided against that. They decided to go for what has been described to me as evolution rather than revolution. And they decided to stick with internal appointments. So they have, and John Murto, they have given him the title of football director. He's been at the club since, I think, December 2013, when David Moyes brought him from Everton, someone who Moyes had worked with at Everton in the past very successfully. He was hired from the Premier League, a position he had as head of elite performance at the Premier League at the time. And he has been working effectively in the role that he's now been given as football director without having that title for some time now. You can look to what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said about the appointments, and you basically have as strong an evidence as you could ask for of that. I've known about it for a little while. I've known John since I came in. He was here when I came. Now it's more of a formal role with the job title. He's still been working behind the scenes, and I've worked well with him. It's a cultural fit. For me, the process of our recruitment is still going to be the same with John and Darren in their new roles. It's work that we've been doing for years now anyway, with the manager, with the scouting department, with the analysis department. That won't change at all. So from Solskjaer's view, what you have are new titles, a new role, formal role for Darren Fletcher as technical director. And he will, in many ways, be the face of the football department, that technical side of the department. So he will, I'm told, talk to the media. He will be involved in speaking to families and to agents and making technical assessments and making assessments about the characters of players and whether they fit what Manchester United see as the type of players to recruit, to build the type of football structure that will succeed for them in the probably the medium term, maybe the short term. But they've been quite cautious about identifying when they expect to win a Premier League title again, when they expect to be competitive for the Champions League title again. They've always talked about this as a multi-year process. So what they've done is basically renamed people already at the club, met that criteria that they'd set for themselves of bringing a director of football in, and they've backed the changes that have happened since Solskjaer came into the club, the cultural reboot, as Ed Woodward calls it, the focus on younger players, the focus on, if possible, players from the British Isles, focus on improving the academy, focus on development pathways from the academy into the first team. It's been described to me the scouting process will be to secure the best talent in their local area. If that best talent doesn't fit the requirements, then they go for the best talent in England. If they can't get what they want from the best talent in England, then go for the best talent in Europe. And actually, if you look at their recruitment of young players over the last 2-3 years, you can see that in place. They're starting to spend very significant sums on taking 16-year-olds from overseas and taking 18-year-olds from overseas. Obviously, with the Brexit process, they're going to be restrained purely to 18-year-old or older signings from outside the UK. They've moved towards that path now. They've formalised it. This, I think, is a statement from Ed Woodward, from the Glazers, that what they have done since they got rid of Jose Mourinho as manager has been successful. They think it's working. So formalise those roles and concentrate on carrying down a path where Solskjaer will effectively lead recruitment because he identifies the positions for the first team where he thinks new blood is needed. Positions and the technical type of player he wants. Then Manchester United's very extensive, I think the biggest scouting department in world football, goes through a list of players to present to Solskjaer. Solskjaer always has a veto to be able to say, I don't want that particular player. If Solskjaer proposes a name and the scouting department don't like it, if he doesn't fit their metrics, then they have the possibility to say, no, we shouldn't go for that. But it actually has a lot of similarities to the Liverpool model, and it's collegiate. So what they've avoided doing is bringing in someone from outside who will, the likelihood was that they would make quite radical changes to the way Manchester United have been operating since Solskjaer became manager. Now, those radical changes could have been a good thing for the club. But what you see here, I think, is Woodward backing the process that he has put his name to and put a front to, and saying we are going to carry down this line. We don't need to take individuals who have proved themselves to be superbly successful in the transfer market. In fact, one of the briefs coming out of the club after they announced this appointment was they were discouraged when talking to some of the candidates that they were emphasising the quality of the recruitment rather than the other areas of the role that United needed to be filled. Have they got good people? Yeah, I think in John Murtough and Darren Fletcher, they do have very good football professionals. They're hardworking. They've got a track record in the game. They're intelligent, good social skills, good soft skills, if you like. Fletcher is not being director of football. He will be learning on the job. And I think to an extent, Murtough will also be learning because this is a higher status role than he's had before. But they are strong football professionals. And I think good appointments in the context of Manchester United making that decision that they believe in what they're doing and want to carry on down that path. Whether that path is the most efficient one for Manchester United is a different story.
Two things, Duncan. I'm just wondering if Ed Woodward's cultural reboot will involve a boot deal with Nike or Adidas or whoever. Other boots are available, obviously. We don't want to endorse any particular one on the Transfer Window podcast because we are not sponsored by any of those particular companies. But more seriously, not many people will have heard of John Murtough, and even Manchester United fans probably are not as aware of him as perhaps they might be. But he was one of the very first in terms of pioneering data analysis in football, which I think probably has been the making of him, but also one of the reasons why he has now ascended to this role, which of course is the first time Manchester United have appointed a director of football.
Yeah, a background in sports science, degree from Liverpool, John Moores University, started at Everton in 1997, so which gives you a sense of how long he's been in elite football in England as an academy sports scientist. And I think probably one of the first academy sports scientists, you're talking, you know, 24 years ago now, and having sports scientists at academy level would have been unusual at that stage. Then moved on to Fulham to work in the academy there, was hired back to Everton. Chris Coleman, who was the manager of Fulham when Murtough was operating the academy there, took him to Coventry City with him for a brief period. Then back to Everton, then hired by the Premier League. And then, as I say, David Moyes convinced him to come and join him at Manchester United when he was made manager, to help reorganise the football department there and to help turn things around. But you make a good point. he is not a big name. I mean, I think if you look at the profiles that have been written about him, since he was appointed football director, I don't think I've seen one where they've actually named all of the clubs he's worked at. Even that's how much in the background he's been up to this stage, but trusted by Manchester United. I told that Mourinho was impressed with his work when he was at Manchester United as manager. He was focused primarily on the academy side during that period. He is a good football professional, a good hard-working football professional, and from that perspective of Manchester United believing they have the right recruitment model and that things have been sorted since Solskjaer came in, it makes sense to go down this route. You see from Solskjaer's words that he trusts Murto and wants to continue working with him. But important part of this to note is Solskjaer will drive the transfer process. So he will have a lead in identifying positions, identifying where money should be spent on the first team. Obviously, with the ability of the club to say, no, we don't want that particular player. We think that's a bad idea. But the ideas are coming from him. And then you can make a judgment and say, if that's what they've been doing since Solskjaer's been in, how good has that process been for the first team? Well, there have been some good, very strong signings. Bruno Fernandes is the obvious example there, who made significant changes to the way the team play and its goal scoring and goal creation. But there have also been one in particular, very expensive and poor signing in the sense that they brought Harry Maguire in, still the most expensive centre back in world football. Still a problem area for the team in that it limits the way the team can play, still error prone. So that's a Solskjaer idea that was not vetoed by the scouting structure. Not surprisingly, I think, because it was Solskjaer's first summer in charge. So you back the guy that Ed Woodward and the Glazers had invested in, but one they're still trying to resolve because they're in the market this summer for another centre back to try and fix the limitations in the game of the centre back that Solskjaer had them spend unprecedented sums on. So I think there you can ask the question, if you're leading this process with a manager who has never proven himself at elite level, is that productive for Manchester United or not? On the other hand, if they change that manager and get someone better in, an elite level manager who will drive that recruitment process more intelligently, then perhaps with the people working around him and the structure they have in place and the trust they have between each other, you can make recruitment more effective by changing the manager rather than the director of football.
We'll come back to the centre-back position in a moment or two, Duncan, on the pod. I'm interested to hear that young Lucky the dog has obviously got an opinion on the situation at Manchester United, although I'm not surprised, having listened to you talk about it for the last 2 years. So we hope that she is in accordance with you. Just a quick word about Darren Fletcher. This is a guy who is extremely articulate, intelligent, very experienced in football, and also, and this is slightly kind of comical, there literally is no room on the bench for him under Solskjaer's management because of the coaches he has, despite the fact that he's doing his coaching badges and believes his future is in coaching. But he's made this decision, very interestingly, to learn his trade as well in administration of football. And also, he will be the face of Manchester United in terms of selling the club to players coming in. So I think that actually is a very good appointment for United, and one that if they don't know John Murta, then they will know Darren Fletcher, obviously, and they'll think to themselves, okay, finally Ed Woodward's got it right. He's found someone and has appointed someone who we can trust with regards to doing the best for the club.
Yeah, very intelligent a great thinker about the game, a very hard worker. If you're going to pick someone to be that front of the club and you want a recent former player, then I think Darren Fletcher has a lot of sense to it, and he's not taking on the full mantle of director of football. So he has people who've worked in the organisational side around him and that scouting department around him. So it makes it the possibility for him to learn on the job. I think the risk for Darren Fletcher in taking this is he's made himself a kind of human shield for Ed Woodward, in that now there is a face and a title, or two titles. If you want to include Matt Judge, three titles, and Matt Judge will continue to be the person who talks to agents about negotiations and contracts, and continue to be the person that agents will contact to discuss renewals and to offer players. So there's now a Darren Fletcher as a face. There's now a director of football structure in place. When things go wrong, those people can be blamed for the things that go wrong, rather than it all coming straight to Ed Woodward. And you know that, you have to say, that isn't a helpful thing for Woodward to have. And he has not handed over any great responsibility here, because he's appointed people who he has already been working with, and Matt Judge, someone he worked with before he was even in the football industry.
Well, knowing Fletch, I suspect if there's going to be a kind of, I'll see you outside, but I'm in Ed Woodward, then I would back Fletch all the way. I'm sure the Manchester United fans would as well. Duncan, you've got some news for us regarding a potential contract extension for one of Manchester United's centre-backs, which is interesting given the news that we brought you on the transfer window regarding their search for a new centre-back.
Yeah, look, they are, as we said, been in the market for a centre-back to solve the Harry Maguire problem for some time now. But they're also...
I love that phrase, the Harry Maguire problem. we should definitely trademark that, along with the Nico Gaitán ruse.
I don't think it's a trademark that Manchester United will be wanting to buy off us, but I think it's an accurate description of the issue they have. And if they do change centre back and get someone quicker, in fact, if it was possible to do it without embarrassing themselves, to switch Maguire out and get a faster centre-back with better positional sense, you could see quite a radical change in the way the team plays. And it's a team which has a very good midfield already, decent options up front in a number of positions, and planning to strengthen up front in the summer again. But they're not going to go down that route. The centre-back they're talking to about a new contract is Eric Bailly. Bailly will be out of contract in 2022. They've already taken up the extension that was available in that deal. So they really have to make a decision this summer as to what they do with him, because if they let it run into the final season, then the likelihood is they lose him for nothing. A player that they signed from Villarreal for an initial €35 million. He has made 100 appearances for Manchester United, this now being his fifth season at the club. Probably been more affected with injury, maybe with the exception of Phil Jones, than any player in the Manchester United first team squad. I think more unfortunate with injury, given some of the injuries he's picked up in collisions rather than muscular problems. But you can see that the fact that they've opened contract talks, they've offered him a pay rise, they've offered a superior bonus structure. There aren't any conditions on that. It's not, they haven't said to buy it's conditional on you proving your fitness, that they value the player still. and want to retain him in the squad, he will have to take a decision over what's the best route to go down. I think there is an advantage to Manchester United in doing this now in a COVID market, because there's a limited amount of money and a limited amount of clubs capable of signing Bailly and offering him something that would be at a higher status or an equivalent status to Manchester United at present. He could probably go down a tier, but whether those clubs can afford to pay him the amount that United are offering, and whether they can afford to pay the transfer fee that Manchester United ask, which I understood would be around 20 million euros for a summer sale, is questionable. I think there's also the context to this that Bailly, I'm told, believes he is better than Maguire and Victor Lindelof, and given a meritocratic decision-making process from Solskjaer, which is something he doesn't have at the moment, because Maguire has to be played and has to be seen to succeed, and Lindelof is preferred on most occasions to Bailly for the partner role. He thinks that given a fair crack of the whip, he can establish himself as first choice at Manchester United. So let's see how that resolves itself. And Ian, I think you've got some information on Harry Maguire's stance on a new centre-back.
Yeah, Harry Maguire has indicated to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the Manchester United coaching staff that he would like to play alongside an English-speaking and preferably English-born centre-back. Someone who understands, in his opinion, the culture of Premier League football, and also can complement him in terms of the way that he plays the game. Maguire's not someone who has been naturally gifted with regards to passing and taking the ball out from the back. He does do it, but as I said, he doesn't necessarily do it as successfully as other players do it. And there have been names mentioned. One would be Ben White at Brighton Hove Albion, who are more naturally a footballer, if you like, rather than a defender first. And so clearly that's something which Maguire would like, because it takes the pressure off him. And even Solskjaer himself, Duncan, has mentioned and conceded that perhaps Maguire needs to be complemented by a player much more suited to his game. And as you've said, Maguire is one of the, if not the first name on the team sheet with regards to United's first team. So it has to be said that someone like Ben White or James Tarkowski would be the solution to that particular conundrum at Manchester United. And this summer, they will definitely be looking at the opportunities to purchase a player who can play alongside Maguire, given the fact that Lindelof and Bailly have not succeeded in terms of being that person who can partner Maguire. We hear a lot in Rio Ferdinand himself, who of course formed a formidable partnership with Nemanja Vidic at Manchester United, potentially the most successful partnership in the last 10, 20 years. That would be an opinion which Maguire would certainly agree with regards to giving him the I wouldn't say protection, but certainly the option, if you like, in terms of pace, in terms of agility, and also, of course, the playing out of the ball from the back.
I think I disagree with you on Maguire's ability to pass the ball and an ability to step out from the back. I think that is, while he's not...
Hang on a second. Are you praising Harry Maguire?
As I've said about Maguire from the start, he's obviously a good one-on-one dual defender, and his statistics look great. And I think this is a measure of where...
You're not answering the question, Duncan. Are you praising Harry Maguire?
Football data analytics let... or simple football data analytics let people down with assessing particularly centre-backs, because you'll get an assessment of how someone like Maguire does on one-on-one duels when he's taking a player on in the tackle and particularly in the air, and he'll come out very well. What you miss is where he's not in position to get involved in that duel, or where he's mispositioned himself and the duel doesn't need to take place because the player's already passed him. He does pass the ball well. He's confident enough bringing the ball out. I'm not saying he's the top defender in that regard, but I don't think he's a traditional old school defender who's only capable of heading the ball and tackling. And actually, you know, Manchester United use him quite high up the pitch in building the play. What he does lack is positional sense and pace. And we said this from the very start when they were looking to sign him. Once you're past Maguire, you're past him. He's not getting back to you. So one mistake in position and can let the opposition in for a goal in a way that doesn't happen with, for example, Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool, which radically changed the way Liverpool were able to play and eventually led to them winning the Premier League title. You can play higher up the field with defenders like that. I think Maguire's tendency is to drop deep to protect himself in a way that John Terry, for example, did at Chelsea, particularly towards the end of his career. And it's not surprising that defenders protect themselves and they don't have pace. I think what's worrying for Manchester United is that Maguire is proposing someone who speaks the same language and understands the football culture of the Premier League as a solution. I think Manchester United need to be picking their next defenders on the best quality available to them in the global market, rather than going down the line they went down last time of let's pick someone who is English, who can be a captain of the club, who fits the cultural reboot in those almost spiritual elements rather than the technical side and the fundamentals of the job. And look at the difference it made to Manchester City when they got over the idea of selecting centre-backs on the basis of their passing ability and chose someone who was first and foremost very good at stopping the opposition, both in duels and positionally. And they went from a team who were conceding too many goals, particularly against more intelligent opposition, to a team who rarely concede once they brought Ruben Dias in.
Spiritual elements in football. That's why he's a doctor and the rest of us, well, I am one as well, but, you know, that's certainly a case for argument in the terms of the way we describe football in the modern age.
The ability to come up with bullshit on any subject, is that what you're saying, Ian?
You said it, not me. History was made this week when it transpired that for the first time in 16 years, and indeed in the careers of said world-beating players who have dominated the Ballon d'Or, Cristiano Ronaldo and Leo Messi will not appear in the Champions League quarter-finals for the first time in that period, as Juventus and Barcelona were both eliminated from the competition. Incredible, really, when you think about it, that the world's two best players currently will not be seen to play in the Blue Ribbon competition in European football. However, it raises questions as well, because, of course, Leo Messi, as we know, and we have reported extensively on the Transfer Window podcast. Messi is out of contract and has offers to leave Barcelona this summer, with Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain in the frame to sign him. But our information is that PSG are also interested in Ronaldo on the basis that they don't believe that Messi will necessarily leave the Camp Nou this summer. And it's an opportunity for them to sign one of the most, well, in probability, most prolific goal scorers and serial winners in world football this summer, in terms of the fact that Juventus have not performed well, look unlikely to win Serie A's Scudetto, and also Andrea Pirlo's reign as Juve manager is also under threat. Duncan, in terms of Ronaldo, he's kind of achieved everything in football, apart from a World Cup win, but everything else he has done with regards to his international and domestic career, to win a title in another one of Europe's top leagues, do you think that would be attractive to him, having obviously been a serial winner in both England and Spain, and obviously he's won a title in Italy as well?
Look, I think it's a remarkable situation, not just that the two of them are out of the Champions League at this stage of the competition, but the two of them are effectively on the market at the same time. As you've said, Joan Laporta's re-election as Barcelona president has changed the game when it comes to Messi, and there now is a possibility he will remain at Barcelona. He's the one candidate that he was prepared to stay at the club for. And you talked in a recent podcast how the financial terms had already been discussed between Laporta and Messi's family and representation. Ronaldo is on the market because Juventus are struggling financially and struggling from a sporting perspective, and he is the best paid player. They're almost certainly not going to win the title in Italy this season. They're 10 points behind Inter at present, albeit with a game in hand, but also 4 points behind a Milan side that we saw in midweek playing very attractive, fluent football against Manchester United at Old Trafford. There are, in the same way that there are limited options for Messi, there are limited places that Ronaldo can move to. And Paris Saint-Germain, with that nation state funding from Qatar, are one of the possibilities. I think another interesting possibility that has been suggested to me is that you have a club in England who are looking for a striker, are thinking about making a decision of whether they take up the expensive option to keep Edinson Cavani for a second year. There's at least doubts amongst the supporters that Anthony Martial is the answer to the number nine problem. I think it's been suggested that the Glazers managed to bring the Super Bowl back to Tampa Bay Buccaneers by signing a veteran superstar of the game and Tom Brady at a very significant salary cost, and perhaps the idea might be presented to them that they bring Cristiano Ronaldo back to Manchester United, a superstar of the game, to play that number nine role, to move them on to the next level.
To go to Tampa Bay as a kicker. Better salaries in the NFL than they are in the PL.
Well, the salary is, I think, very important here. But with Ronaldo, I think there's a difference with Ronaldo and Messi. And Ronaldo still sees himself playing until he's 40, has numerous ambitions of goals he wants to score, records he wants to set, titles he wants to win. Messi has talked on several occasions about how he feels the end of his career at the top level of football is coming closer, how it gets harder year after year. I think you're buying different products between the two. Although a lot of the attraction of the players comes in their status, and that's why they're being marketed to the nation state owners to see if they can get salary from these guys on the basis of signing a name as well as a footballer.
Just remember, everyone who's listening, that Duncan Castles has just used the commerce speak of football by saying they are different products rather than actual people who play football and are very good at it. True, Duncan, now, joking aside, it's a situation where I guess crossroads, in effect, for Cristiano Ronaldo in terms of his career. And clearly, he's still a very, very important football player, first and foremost, rather than a product. But in terms of his product, he also brings in a lot of money in terms of marketing and merchandise, etc., which makes him, of course, a very attractive option for clubs, whoever might want to attract him there. So it will be interesting to see, should he decide to leave Juventus this summer and move elsewhere, whether it's a sentimental return to Manchester United or Real Madrid, or indeed a new adventure in Paris. It's the second podcast of the week, which of course means that we are going to award the donkey to the person or people who deserve to be recognised for their contribution with regards to the last week in football. And I'm pleased to say, Duncan, that apparently, and I haven't even opened the golden envelope yet, we may well have an historical moment. Oh, there's the there we go. That's the golden envelope being opened. With regards to it coming from three nominations in the same game. And that game is Manchester United versus AC Milan. And they are Dean Henderson. It's the Dido Harding Award for failing to deliver when it most matters. This, of course, is a reference to the track and trace, which has cost £37 billion and couldn't even track one person within 6 days. Anyway, don't need to track Dean Henderson because he was on the pitch for Manchester United versus AC Milan and made a fairly basic error, which led to Milan's equalising goal in added time. We're also going to, and of course we take no pleasure in this, point out that Harry Maguire failed to deliver a second goal for Manchester United from a yard out. And our old friend VAR, or Valerie, as we have always referred to her, when Frank Kessie's first goal and the handball was dismissed.
So Harry Maguire for a track and trace award. I think Harry Maguire would be one of the easiest footballers to track and trace if you wanted to put a system to do that.
I'm sure strikers would agree with you.
Track and evade, I think, in the case of strikers. So we'll let him off with this one. I think Dean Henderson, we said that this was going to be a kind of head-to-head between Gianluigi Donnarumma, who Manchester United are considering as first choice goalkeeper for next season because he is out of contract and being offered to them by his agent, Mino Raiola. And I don't think Henderson did himself any favours in that game. It's always been the test. If you want to be a Manchester United goalkeeper, can you deliver in the key moments? That this game, they're not out of the cup, but losing that goal, away goal in added time changes the dimension of the tie and lowers the possibility that Solskjaer can get a badly needed first trophy in his third season at the club from Europa League. And you know, it was a goal he should save. He's in position, he gets his hand to the ball, but it goes through him. And it has to be said, he didn't look particularly clever on the two other balls that went into the net earlier in the game. Okay, Kessie's shot was very good, but I would argue that that's the kind of shot we see David De Gea getting hands to, and we see top goalkeepers managing to stop some of the time. And I think, yeah, Henderson still has something to prove in having to deliver at the key moments, which is the test for being Manchester United and England goalkeeper. But I think this award has to go to VAR. It's changed a lot in its implementation during the years we've had to suffer it in football, but one of the fundamentals and still written into those IFAB laws is they should only change clear and obvious errors by the referee. They weren't able to demonstrate, there was no video evidence that clearly demonstrated that Kessie handled that ball. In fact, if you look at the three players who were challenging him before he shot into Henderson's goal, none of them appealed for handball, which is typically what you see if a player close to an opponent sees the ball come off his arm. They will usually appeal to alert the referee. There was no appeal from those individuals closest to them. None of the angles demonstrated that it had definitely hit his arm. In fact, it looked more to have come off his midriff before he shot the ball. And they really should have stayed well alone from that and stuck to the letter of what is a problematic VAR law to start with, but far worse when people decide they have to intervene and find fine detail reason to stop what are very good goals being scored and important goals being scored in the game of football.
Well said, as always, Duncan. And also well said because, of course, we have demonstrated that we bring in the news before it becomes news in terms of Manchester United's recruitment of a director of football and a technical director as well. If you want to get the quickest notification in terms of the new podcast which drops, then please, if you're on YouTube, turn on those notifications, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and also engage with us on our social media platforms, which are at Transfer Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And Duncan is at Duncan Castles. I'm at Garbo SJ on our individual accounts. And of course, as you know, we are happy to chat to you about all the subjects we discuss in the podcast and more. We will be back next week, of course. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Until next week, we say stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.